Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. I want to tell you a story about Polly. It's a boy. Some people think that name is a girl's name. But Polly was a boy. He was small. And, you know, his name is Paul. And, you know, he was once called Small Paul. But then he grew up a little bit. They just called him Polly. From a very early age, if his mom would ask him, Polly, do you want this to drink or that to drink? Kool-Aid or do you want some orange juice? And he just wouldn't, he'd always kind of look at his mom like, I wonder what she wants me to drink. Or he just was unsure about it and he would often not decide, or she would just give him something and he would like that. Or just the usual, mom, you know what I like. And that was like for everything. Every little decision was like he would gauge his mom or his dad. Like, go along with what they want. Or if they would suggest something, not ask him, but just suggest, he would say, yeah, okay. Why would he go along with every suggestion? Because he saw the love in their eyes when he would say, okay. And that was something that he, it went beyond, it went sort of below his level of detection. He didn't think about it. He just knew from a very early age, if they would suggest something, he would go along with it. It's like they were pleased. And then that made him feel good. So he just did it all the time. So if they didn't suggest something, he wasn't really sure. Because it's like, well, like at the very unconscious level, he's like, I don't know how I'm going to get love here. But, and he would find a way to give an answer that he felt that they would want him to give. And never an answer that they wouldn't want. In fact, to question them was absolutely, it never happened. To question them was so outside of his reality, even on something like, what do you want to drink? If they were to suggest this, for him to say, I don't want that, was never even a possibility for him. His whole life. And he did this with everybody, not just with his parents, but I mean, it worked. He did it with his relatives, with his siblings. Everyone at school, his teachers, everyone he met, because it worked. Just went along with things. And he didn't know that every time he did, he had to, it wasn't just stuff down a desire for something else. He had to stuff himself down, his anger, but he never felt the anger. He just felt that chemical hit that he would get from going along with something. It was only later in his life when he learned, every time I was doing that, I was storing anger. Because sometimes I didn't want that to drink. But how would I have known? Because I was just going along with what they wanted. He had to do work to even know that, because by the time he grew up, he had people pleased his way into jobs that didn't work because he wasn't authentic, relationships that didn't work, but he people pleased himself into them. Like, it works, but it was a sabotage because he couldn't, you know, face conflict or disagree. He went along with things and people didn't really know how he felt or thought, and that would create problems. That he couldn't be trusted. It's like, what does he really think? Or is he even here? He'd be in the room, but quiet. Storing anger. Unknowingly. But always nice. Like a lot of people, he gets on a spiritual path, but the very last thing he even considers is that he has buried anger. And that's why he's drawn to the spiritual path. He's just walking along one day and he notices somebody sitting quietly. It's not a homeless person. It's just some guy. And he says, may I ask you what you're doing? You're not sleeping. You don't live here. He said, yeah, I'm meditating. Because the guy was sitting in this interesting pose. And he sat down with the guy and he said, what do you mean by that? He said, what I do is I sit and I listen to the cars go by one by one. And I noticed that I could just watch or just listen to each car if I have my eyes closed one at a time. Even if there are several cars, I can just notice one car and stay observing that one car, and then it leaves. And another one comes. And then after a while, I just get quiet and I start to hear my thoughts like that. Just one by one. I don't have to do anything with them. They just come by like the cars. I can either notice them or not, but I do better when I notice them. And then when I get up off of here, I'm more present. I do better in my life. And Pauly was so interested in this. He was fascinated with it. He never really talked to anyone who actually meditated. He never heard it described like that. It's like, that's so practical. That's so simple. The car thing. Yeah, I can hear the cars. I can do this. He goes home and he just masters the art of meditation in a lot of different forms. But he always comes back to all the thoughts and feelings are like cars coming by. You don't have to do anything with them. So now in his relationships, it's like somebody will say, where do you want to go eat, Pauly? And he'll hear the thoughts, maybe Pizza Hut. And that'll come and go. Maybe I should say something. That comes and goes. And then it gets quiet and he goes, I don't know, where do you want to go? And the people around him are like, Pauly, that's really, people that don't know him especially. Like, you're so open and so, like, you're so easy to get along with, so agreeable. And of course he gets love this way. Meditation starts to become part of his personality because he never really had much of a social life. He was kind of a people pleaser, and so people couldn't really engage with him. They didn't really know who he was. But now he's kind of interesting because he's got this spiritual thing and he shares it with people and they realize, well, that's why he's so peaceful. But they don't realize he'd always been that way. And it feels like, you know, when you find your spiritual path or whatever it is, and your calling in life, this was Pauly's calling. Meditation. And then awakening, because he learned that the guy on the street didn't tell him the whole story. That if you watch the cars long enough, you awaken to your true self. And, you know, the feelings too, not just thoughts, but you wake up to what you are, and then that's nirvana. He went to study that. He had to know everything about it, nirvana. He wanted to know what the experience was like, who wrote about it. Is it something else in different religions that has a different name? But do people have this everywhere? Is this what the Christian mystics talk about? Is this what Rumi's talking about? He read everything that he could on the subject of awakening. And it seemed to just fit perfectly into his life because he was always quiet, kind of the quiet observer. And now he could observe the internal universe instead of just being sort of anxious around people and going along with everything. He just sort of went along with all of his thoughts and feelings, and that was, for some reason, safer to him. And he felt empowered a little bit with people, but still suffered, still the same patterns. Same relationships didn't work out. The job wasn't happy. Spiritual search wouldn't end. It's like, where does this end? There's a lot of cars. He couldn't get angry at the cars because he had buried it. Those cars didn't come and go at all. The anger cars, they never came and went. But he never even thought about that. Never even occurred to him, like, where are the angry cars? I see a lot of sad cars, there's some shameful cars, some fearful cars, but there's no anger cars. But he was told by his Buddhist teacher that, look, anger is the ego. So if you see a lot of angry cars, you need to watch your cars. You probably have watched enough cars, you don't have any anger. That's what we do here. We don't really have much. And Pauly thought for a moment, but I've never had any anger. But he didn't feel like he could question the teacher. And he didn't realized that was the same pattern. Somebody suggested something, he had to go along with it. So I just kept watching the cars. There were no angry ones. Polly didn't see any angry thoughts and feelings really in his meditation or in his awareness, but he sure did attract angry women. He'd be attracted to their confidence because he didn't really have a lot. And that's the first thing he would notice, that they were beautiful, confident. But then at first angry at other things, but never at him. And he's like, that's okay, because I like that. They can, a little feisty. But then they would start to get angry at him. He didn't know what to do with that. That never happened in his house. So those relationships would just keep ending, and he kept going back to the same kind of woman. And from time to time, he would think, but why? I don't ever see any angry cars, but I'm always with an angry woman. He finally, after going to a lot of different retreats, because he was searching for the answers as to why he kept doing this in relationship and why his job wasn't working out, and he kept watching cars, but they don't stop. Just like sad cars, shameful cars keep coming back, the same ones. The car that says you're a loser is always there. It's like it's just parked with a bunch of energy on it. And he doesn't like that car. And he tries to find a teacher who's going to help him get rid of that car, so to speak. That you're a loser. Because that it never comes out. He thinks that's the core thing right there. I'm people pleasing, I know that. And I'm suffering, like they say, but it's because of that. And he finds a teacher, Buddhist. He says, I think I know what it is, teacher, and I'll tell you what I think it is. Can you give me some feedback? Teacher says, yeah, go ahead and tell me. I think it's that feeling inside that we have. It's a sense of separation, like they say in the traditions, and they say in Buddhism. And mine, that if I put words to it, would be, I'm a loser. And Polly explains to the teacher how it plays out in his life, that if he wasn't a loser, he would have a better job. He would keep a woman, or he would date a woman that would treat him better. He would end his spiritual search. And the teacher said, well, you're right. That sense of I is the root of it. And for you, it's loser, these stories that you have. And then he gave him some pointers. He said, I want you to just be with that I feeling and thought, a sense of a loser from awareness, and just stay as awareness with that parked car. Or if it keeps coming back, just let it be there. Welcome it. That feeling of loser, just welcome it fully. And Polly was floored. He's like, nobody's ever told me to welcome that. I thought that the whole point of nirvana was the cessation of all of that. So why would I welcome something that's just coming and going, or it's going to dissolve? But the more he welcomed it, the more he felt like this was the right path. And so he welcomed it, and it got better. There was less tension, but nothing really changed in his life. It's like the spiritual search was bringing more degree of presence, but the relationship issues were still there, and the job was still even worse. He just didn't want to be there. Dating a new girl, and she's angry. He's trying to think, am I going to go? Am I going to stay? Same patterns. Just a little bit less of that feeling of I'm a loser, but no real change in life. Keeps going back to the teacher. Has a lot of insights. Polly does, but the teacher says, look, I'm only here for one reason, to help you see through the illusion of the self, You're still clinging for survival to that belief. You need to look at it. And he gives him a few more instructions. But that doesn't work either. Nothing does. Nothing changes the patterns. Nothing fundamentally changes that deep, deep feeling. I mean, thoughts, he gets quieter. There's some quietness there, but he's just troubled by the whole thing because something is missing. So he finally comes to work with me after resisting because I kept saying in a video some not great things about practices that ignore buried emotions. He heard something on people-pleasing and the pleasure-pain cycle. And it was something that he resonated with, but he couldn't see it in meditation, which is the people-pleasing is the anger repression. It's a pleasure-pain thing, and we have to be conscious enough to see it and embodied enough to see it, that how we create suffering that way is we survive by being that false self. It's a pattern. It's a mind-body connection. It's discoverable in your body. It's not a theory or anything like that. It's not conscious yet until you find it. And, well, let's just say, Pauly, when he was going to those other, that's like my teaching before we did repression inquiry. We didn't do anything that would have shown Pauly the buried anger. Because those teachings aren't aimed at it. Maybe they should be, but they're not. And they're probably created and passed down by a lot of anger repressors. So when I think about that teacher, I'm breaking the fourth wall here to tell you about what I think about this story. The teacher is doing the best that he can because the teacher really believes that that's the way. But there's a reason that I'm a loser is there that you can only discover if you make conscious the emotional repression under it. The I'm a loser or any identity is there to get our needs met. That's not what we are. It's what we had to believe to stay safe in childhood and to get love and approval. Things like I'm not good enough, I'm a loser, I'm unlovable are there for a function, as like you would function to survive to get water. Survival is what you think you are. So that's what the Buddhism and non-duality is about. But missing repression is missing the root of it. So that's why it sustained the suffering for him. So I'm going to come back to the story because there's more to it now that you know some context. When he comes to work with me in a mentorship program, so we're working together regularly. And he comes to work on the people-pleasing because that's what he heard on my video. But what he can't work with that yet. He's too resistant to even believing that it's anger repression at first. Even though he heard it, people come here like that. They can't help it because the first thing he said is, I don't feel anger. I don't see how the issue could be anger. And I said, because it's buried. If it's there, right? We don't know because it's in your body and we have to do the testing to see. You would see it, feel it. I mean, not anger, but you would feel the contraction that holds that with certain inquiries. But he just sort of shrugged his shoulders. And that's what we do as anger repressors. Like we have these responses that they all keep us safe. Our pointers to presence, the meditation, all of it for Pauly, the people-pleasing kept him safe. It's a mechanism that he couldn't see because of his way of meditating, which basically just rests with the sensation, not knowing the sensation is generating from the unconscious, the repression inside that, the stories and stuff that he was, the cars that he was watching. It's exactly what I was doing as a teacher, is doing that myself on my own path, missing buried anger, but then teaching people just like that Buddhist teacher. So when we start working together and I say, well, nobody wins this one because only your body knows if it's buried anger. So here's the test. He takes the test. Then we start working together. He clearly sees that behind all that is the buried anger. We work together for several months, and now he's still with the woman who's angry. He hasn't left yet because he knows he has to work out some stuff. And as we start talking about that, he said one day, he's after he's done plenty of repression inquiry work, he finds himself really angry at her. And of course, she would get angry from time to time anyway. So this was not in the relationship anything new. It was just new for him to be angry. And it was something that she said, but she wasn't angry. It just set him off. And his anger was bigger than he thought was in him. So he is processing on his own, but he doesn't realize that he's still trying to get to nirvana from repression, when the need to get there keeps him safe from the repression. That's why people have difficulty embodying presence right there, because of the concepts, even as benign as they might seem, even if you're a skilled practitioner or have had an awakening, that right there sneaks in when we're triggered or something. Like another person that I worked with, they learned that repression creates the triggers, but then when they get triggered, they'll go try to find no self in it so they don't have to feel the buried anger behind the trigger. It's very sneaky. And Polly was doing the same thing in different ways. But eventually he saw that in that moment when he was really angry, that this truly was anger repression. But now the fear was, oh my gosh, was this what it's like? I said, Polly, no, hold on. When you were a little kid and your parents asked you what you wanted to drink or eat or do this or that, or they suggested something, what did you say? What happened? I went along with it. They suggested something, you went along with it. How many times did you question anything? Tell me how you questioned it. Tell me how it felt safe to do that. Tell me how it felt safe to get angry, Polly. Then how many times did you store anger unconsciously throughout your lifetime? Infinitely number, it's every moment. So there's that anger. The anger that came out with your girlfriend is not situational anger. It's not anger that's responding to a moment. It's the past held in your body. That anger held back for so long that now it comes out. And I said, Polly, do you remember how you were just coming here for nirvana? And also you said you wanted to deal with your triggers. And I said, it goes deeper than that. And he said, yeah. I said, this is it. Because see, people want to go for nirvana who have buried anger. And that's why nobody can embody nirvana, even if it is real, until you deal with the real stuff. And when we try to go for it, when we have trauma, this is what happens. So I want you to pull back and listen to what I said in the beginning. We're not going for nirvana or to get rid of anything or seeking anything. If that comes up, remember how I said process that, because even though I know you want that, when you go into process, you'll see that comes from the buried anger. So he got that. He started to incorporate that. But I said, with the explosive anger, think of the little kid who held it back in every moment. And then when it comes out, what did you want to do with it? He said, I wanted to get rid of it. I said, of course. But when you're clear and conscious, situational anger, you don't have to get rid of. It's felt and expressed if it's situationally appropriate, clean or not. It's just anger. But it's the holding on to it for your whole life. And then it comes out because probably you didn't hear me when I said, it's the small moments. It's still the small moments. It's still its presence. But it's, we can't say we're here now, and ignore that in every small moment from our here nowness, we're still doing the same thing. The absence of some triggers doesn't indicate transformation. When we go after dissolving triggers, we ignore buried anger. So you were trying to ignore buried anger and dissolve a trigger. That's the bypass. Because what we do here is we make the unconscious conscious. There's nothing in that that has anything to do with getting rid of a trigger, because the triggers are there to keep us safe from buried anger, because we're still afraid of it. That's why we're triggered. When you are not afraid of anger, it gets integrated into your being so that those small moments change. So that when someone says, hey, Polly, do you want to go eat here or there? You say, here, if that's what you want. But you wouldn't know it when you have repression. That's because it's a pattern of just not knowing what you want, or people pleasing, or just making the peace, or keeping peace, or making things right, instead of being yourself. What do you expect? When you finally do a little bit of work and you let that explosion that's always been there peek its head out, and then you want a process that makes it go back in, which is why it's explosive in the first place, is you always wanted to keep it in. Now, do you want to talk about what KI is really about? Unmet needs. Yeah, it's not about anger. That's just the emotion that you happen to repress, Polly. It could have been hurt or sadness. But when we're kids, our needs aren't met because we don't have to go along with everything. It's okay to cry. We can be angry if it's safe. But it's not. So here we are. And we have to focus on that to get to the loser thing, by the way. Because that's always been there, hasn't it, Polly? He'll say yes. And I would agree with his teacher on most of those things. It's the illusion of separation. It's there for survival. As long as there's clinging, it'll be there. That's all true, for sure. The only thing I disagree with is it's there because you need it there for safety. You have buried anger. Until you deal with the buried anger, it's going to be there, keeping you safe and getting you love. Just like when you were a kid. The luck of the draw is just that you're an anger repressor like me. It could have been something else. So then Polly got serious and he realized, not that he wasn't serious, but he was afraid of real authenticity. That's why a lot of people on a spiritual path don't really like that word, or don't understand it, or are triggered by it. Just the other day, somebody said something like, oh, so now we have to be authentic. I said, it's not a rule. It's just, it creates suffering. It's the ego. That's how we suffer. People pleasing and a number of other things, but Polly's is people pleasing. Why wouldn't we talk about it? Suffering. This is a modality that deals with suffering. And you can't not talk about authenticity with that, because look at Polly's story. I mean, what else do you need? Even the spirituality was used in a way that was not authentic to how he intended or the traditions, because it was used by his system to avoid the buried anger. And even a lot of the pointers and talk were distracting for him, consciously or not, from the teacher, from the buried anger. So, and there's other things too. He got love and approval just like he did with, he never questioned the teacher. See that? that part of the story, that's a pattern of not being able to speak up and say, but what about this or what about that? And then that starts a conversation. That's authenticity, see, but you don't, that doesn't happen with teachers and students, really, like true dialogue, because if somebody can't say, but I don't see how this is, I don't see this. People say it to me all the time. I don't understand, Scott, how shame protects us from anger. And I'll be like, you know what? You shouldn't understand that, because shame protects you from the anger that makes you think that thought, that you don't understand it. It keeps you safe. Why would you understand it? But I went into AI for answers like that because people can find it in their own experience. So I give them the inquiry, they find it. But then I give them the science that shows there's research out there that says shame and guilt protect us in relationship from the deeper repressed emotions. Simple example, somebody gets angry a lot because they repress hurt or sadness. And then they have to apologize because they don't have any other way of resolving that. They don't know it comes from that deep fear of vulnerability. So guilt is safer. And shame is a non-starter. It's like somebody feels shame, that's the opposite of authenticity. They're protected. Their authenticity as an anger repressor under that would be to feel and express what's true there instead of feeling ashamed. Can't do it. Shame protects us from whatever we repress. These are all things that Polly couldn't get to before this work because of the repression he was missing. Well, that's the end of that story. Let's see what time. Oh my gosh, 31 minutes. Perfect timing. So let me say a few more things. Sometimes these stories are fun for me. They're all ad lib, but I've lived these stories. I mean, Polly's not me exactly, but close, somewhat. Different things about his story. But there's a lot of Polly's out there. You may be one. We're the last to know. That's all I'll say on that. Truly, that's an inside joke at KI. So you found out that you had buried anger. You're the last to know because you buried it. And that Polly story and the other stories I've told on podcasts are like that, because you'll see people meander in all these different directions looking for the answer and finding it's, of course, the one place they not only are scared to look, they don't even think to look there. And it's not just the present moment. I wrote that in one of my books on the back cover. I wrote, you know, the answer is where we refuse to look, the present moment. It's true, but it's not complete because even if you're here now or you've meditated, you've had a realization, you can't see what's buried. And the buried emotions for Polly, they hold his potential. So that's what we're really missing. The treasure is buried. And then that's the embodiment, though. So in the old days, in Polly's story, well, embodiment is an interesting topic, just real quick, because what we do is we do the body work first, and we do that in present awareness. We do it all together, actually. But Polly's path before he got here was with a teacher. The traditional kind of looking at the sense of separation, the sense of self, but without referring to repression. So that's what I consider a bypass, and that's what me and Toshi are writing about in our new book. We've written the book called Awake But Sick, The Myth of Immediate Freedom and the Dangers of Spiritual Seeking and Finding. It's not, that kind of sounds bad sometimes, but it's not as, it's really good news because it shortens a path for someone like Polly and for you out there who need additional information like the research to show you things that your consciousness won't let you see yet, that you have to do inquiry to see. It interrupts a spiritual path to read a book like that, or it might, in a way that Polly was never interrupted. And so his suffering continued for that reason. That's what that book is there for, we think. So that book is not out yet, or it will be soon. Go to repressiontest.com. Take our somatic test if you haven't. That gets you on our newsletter and you'll hear about our book release. There are free tools floating about to start KI before you have to pay for anything. There's a lot of good free somatic tools on my social media channels. Monday is a free inquiry day. And then also, but the work that Polly and the story did to finally get to buried anger is not free. That's the work that we charge for in our mentorship program. My throat is gone because I've done 3 podcasts today, 1 guest podcast this morning. This is my podcast day. So you'll hear these come out. And I have to go now. And my poor doggy's over here having a nightmare and my throat's going. So I want to explain this, though, as much as I can every podcast. There's a lot of free tools. These tools are, they're in some cases better than a lot of the stuff out there. We can't say better than everything. It's not about better. But I want people to understand there's a lot of good free stuff here. And there's a reason for it. It's not just to help you, it's to help us. Because the sooner that you learn what Polly didn't, the better that we can show you why we developed the work that we did here. So you can check out the link if you want to start the work that we do here. The March, well, it might be past, yeah, it's past March now. The April jumpstart, because I'm recording this at the end of February, but the March jumpstart is starting in 2 days. So you'll hear this in March, which means the next jumpstart will be April 1st. Don't miss it. You can sign up with a link in the description. That is if you're ready to do that. And then if you want to come, oh, got to tell you this. So the work is so much more accessible and we'll tell you how to access it based on what you need. And the way that I'm doing that, there's a link to come talk to me about the one-on-one programs. It used to be just my intensive. That's the one that I recommend. It's not only the one that I focus on to make my living, but also it's the one that helps people the most. That's why I do it, for those two reasons. But we have other programs. And so I do want to help people who can't afford. So we finally have a scholarship apprentice program, which is half the price of the monthly subscription, which is lower than the intensive. So the exact price, I don't know, a couple hundred or so right now, a month. You get a lot of mentorship by someone who's at high level in their training and overseen by a certified trainer. So it's mentorship in KI at a much lower price, but you have to show us that you do have financial hardship so that we have boundaries around that. And then not everybody takes advantage of it who can pay. And so there's the scholarship program, plus we start to recognize now even more that we can provide a service that is like mentorship, helping people develop skills that prepare them for repression inquiry. And you might say, well, why not just come and do the repression inquiry? Everybody wants to do that, that comes here. Well, it's not that easy. If it were that easy, there would be more people who just wouldn't be suffering, frankly. But we get something out of suffering. Look at Polly. He got love and approval for all of that. So it's not so easy to come here and be really open to work like this. And I'm just being honest, it's really deep work. It will change Polly's life and the story if I told it. But we also know that not everybody's ready for it. You know, if Polly would have come earlier in his life, he might not have heard it. But he had gone through enough to see that he can't keep bypassing. It doesn't work. And so if people come and they're not ready for, their system doesn't have the capacity, or they don't have the, they're too busy. Some people just don't want to learn a process of deep somatic work. They want to work towards it. We have a what we call a 2D mentorship, which just means this is the same tools that are free out there. If you're struggling to even use those, we're going to help you with those. And that we help people at basically now any level, from free to scholarship to all dimensions of practice, groups, one-on-one. But we don't advertise it all because we don't want to confuse you with a bunch of choices. So I put one link in the description. Come talk to me and I'll tell you those options. Thank you.